Welcome, everybody, to another AV Forums exclusive podcast where I'm beyond thrilled to be joined by legendary filmmaker Mr. Neil Jordan to talk about the 40th anniversary 4K UHD Blu-ray release of his superb film Mona Lisa, courtesy of Arrow Video. So, hi, Neil, welcome, and thank
Hi.
you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mark. I'm here.
Brilliant. Well, I rewatched the film yesterday, and Mona Lisa still feels so unique. How would you describe it to audiences today if they were coming to the film for the first time?
Well, it's a crime drama, set in London, obviously, around the period it was made, which is the 80s, and but it's a crime drama about a man who fundamentally doesn't understand women. That's what it is, basically. That's how I would describe it. And it's the kind of movie that is entirely dependent on the center performance, there should be a name for that kind of film, but there probably isn't, But I mean, Bob, when we initially presented a script, there was a writer called David Leland who sadly is no longer with us. David wrote a first draft based on an outline I'd given to him, and I brought it to Bob Hosk. There were various actors were being discussed, and when I met Bob, I saw an entirely different trajectory to the whole thing, So I saw a character there. I rewrote the script totally around him, basically around his energy, and his emotional kind of depth and volcanic kind of capacity, really, so. And it became Mona Lisa. It became the film that you saw, that we've just restored, or that that's now been re-released on Blu-ray,
No, absolutely fabulous. I mean, Bob Hoskins was utterly immense in it, and I thought a very interesting approach that he took was he almost interpreted his life through, the heroes of those pulp detective novels that he
Well,
liked. He
at
was
the time I
almost
was
playing
reading
that.
John Franklin Bardon, do many people read him these days? I'm sure they don't, but he was a surreal kind of detective novelist who, was published in the United States. I don't think he was published in Britain at the time. And I decided, I mean, one of the things I did, because most crime movies, let's say like Get Carter or The Long Good Friday or whatever, really, they're devoid of dialogue, really, No, they're kind of pared down to action and stuff like that. I wanted these characters to talk, and I wanted the conversations to have as much kind of import as the plot itself and as the violent events that unfolded. So it became a crime movie that was full of kind of hard-bitten but also digressive dialogue sometimes, and mainly through the character that I'd introduced, that was his friend played by Robbie Coltrane, and so it became a movie about the characters themselves discussing the import of the story as it was unraveling.
That's absolutely fascinating because I think the other thing that you did so brilliantly is that you completely withhold traditional backstory. We open on Bob walking down that London Bridge. He's just been released. We don't know why he was imprisoned. We don't know about the origins of that fantastic relationship with Robbie Coltrane.
And there's a background to that because it was made for George Harrison's company, which is called Handmade, and
Handmade.
Handmade was being run by a gentleman called Dennis O'Brien, an American guy who looked after George's fortune and wanted to get into the movie business, I suppose, in the way that Sam Goldwyn and other people had. And he kept saying, "Look, we know nothing about this guy. We don't know what his background is. Why was he in prison? Blah, 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 blah." All the normal kind of questions you get from executives. And I just said to him, "Look, it's a total red herring. It doesn't matter why he was in prison." And they said, "Well, we need an explanation." I said, "Okay." So I said, "Okay, let's have him go into a pet shop and get a rabbit, like a white rabbit. Seriously, honestly, And that will, he'll give that to the guy who's hiring him, who is a kind of functionary of Mortwell, the crime boss played by Michael Caine. And that will function the way a white rabbit would, you know, or the way a red herring would, really. And it kind of became part of the story in a way, in a rather lovely way, I thought, really. But it was that kind of movie, you know, where we were left alone, you know, and we could introduce elements like that on the fly, and they would become part of the story, part of the kind of rather surreal texture of the whole thing.
Wow. I mean, the white rabbit, it's a literal white rabbit.
Literal white rabbit. It was a white rabbit, and that's why George pulls up outside the pet shop, goes in, gets white rabbit, says, "Give him this, he'll know what it means." You know, we never know what it means, but Michael Caine knows what it means. Bob Hoskins knows what it means. Thomas,
No, I
played by Robbie Coltrane, doesn't know what it means. You know, but the essential characters in the story do know what it means. You know, and it ends up kind of bouncing around the bloodied body of Caine at the end, which is kind of cool. It completes that story in a way, you know.
No, totally. And I think that's really interesting, because what that does, that all helps shape the sort of, it's a duality of the film, isn't it? It's a crime film, but it's a romantic fable, you know, and it's both, you know. And it was that tonal sort of balance, did you conspicuously shape it from the outset, or did it, you know, you mentioned about evolving the character with
No,
Bob.
no,
Did
no,
the
no, no.
story
It's
evolve like that?
basically, when I met Bob, I saw a new shape to the whole story, basically, you know, and I developed it around that. Now, at the time, Bob Hoskins was known for The Long Good Friday, where he played Howard Chand, who you have that famous scene where everyone's hung upside down on butcher's hooks and all that. But the Bob that I was interested more was the part that he played in a TV series called Pennies from Heaven that was written by Dennis Potter, I think. Dennis Potter, wasn't that? That right? Yeah.
Was, yeah.
And that character was full of loss and full of heart, and he was full of longing, and that's the element of Bob Hoskins that I wanted to draw in the movie.
And interesting, looking at your career, sort of both, you know, before and after Mona Lisa, that footless blend of genres, you know, crime, romance, horror, gothic, dreamlike tone of it all, is that what draws you to a piece of work? Is it, you know, rather than story, character, what is it that draws you to a piece of work?
It's emotion, really. You know, it's the
Right.
possibility of getting emotion onto the screen and into the story and into the characters. And this became a very, very emotive story, really. You know, I mean, he's driving Kathy Tyson around. He's a racist. He despises her initially. Then he becomes intrigued by her. Then he thinks he can save her from what awful fate she seems to be facing. And he finds out that she's in love with another woman and he's gotten everything wrong. I mean, I quite like, I you're right. I'm often like, I was attracted to Interview with the Vampire because it's a vampire movie, but it's also a movie about a central character who's assuaged by waves of guilt through eternity, you know. That I could relate to. That's why I made that movie, you know. Similarly with this, you know. But I mean, we bring our own sensibilities, don't we, to stories and to genres. And the great thing about movies is that there are different genres, you know. They're like different houses with different rooms in a big mansion with different colors to them and different expectations, you know. And that's what I've done through my career, such as it's been so far.
Superb, excellent. Well, switching to now the new 4K UHD Blu-ray. What was your extent of your involvement with Arrow Video for that? I mean, we always love to see that restoration card pop up at the beginning to say that, you know, a director has approved this. But what does that actually mean? What did they ask you to do?
Well, they go back to the negative, yeah. And I mean, initially, I think there was a remastering of it about 10 years ago when Roger Pratt, the cameraman, was still alive, and I think it was done by Arrow at the same time, you know. And you know, we sat in a grading suite in Soho, and we went through every frame of the film, and you know, kind of balanced. You know, you made sure the balance was right, and make sure it was. And they end up making actually more accurate kind of versions of the movies that exist on the old decaying negative prints. You know what I mean? Or you know, positive prints really. And they do it with enormous amount of care. And it's rather wonderful that the Blu-ray kind of you know the audiences want to have this physical copy of what would be
Absolutely.
an authentic version of the film again, because you know you see it on TV, you see it in streaming, you know, you've no real control over the color balance or the contrast or any of those things. And the fact that people really want to kind of rediscover movies in that in an authentic way. To me, it's great, really. You know, it's a lovely thing.
No, in fact, well, it's a big year, isn't it? Because you've also got The Crying Game coming out for Criterion as well, haven't you? So it's we're
I
finally
have.
getting some Neil Jordan on 4K. If you could give any other of your films that same level of attention, that, you know, so not The Crying Game, not Mona Lisa, but any one of your other films, what would it be?
The Butcher Boy. I made a movie for Warner Brothers called The Butcher Boy. And it was kind of a very, a black comedy, as black as a
Yeah.
comedy can get, really set in Ireland. And it was at the time I'd made a few movies for Warner Brothers, and they said to me, "What are you doing next?" I said, "Look, whatever I'm doing next, it's not for you." The more I said that, the more they said, "We of course we can do this." And then when I finished the movie, they looked at it, they didn't know what to do with it. But I would love if there was a Blu-ray version of that was to come out. But I mean, I'll
Fabulous.
have to talk to whoever owns Warner's these days. I believe it's I don't know, Larry Ellison or son or somebody like that, but it's there. I would love to do a Blu-ray of it. I've actually asked Criterion. I think they have the rights to it, and they may be doing a version of it themselves. Yeah.
Oh, fabulous. So does that mean you're a big movie watcher at home? So, and do you have a big physical media collection, or do you just, you know,
No, I go to the
pop
cinema.
Netflix on a
I go to the cinema. I really do. You
How
know.
often do you go then? You
Well, I
must
went
go a
last
lot.
night.
Oh, fabulous. What are
I
you
mean, the
going to see?
amazing thing is happening at the moment. I mean, are you a cinema goer at the present, are you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
So
very
I
much
was
so.
in, I mean, I go to the cinema about 3 or 4 times a week, and generally I'm sitting in an empty cinema. But
Wow.
lately, since Christmas, every time I go to the cinema, it's full. It's
Oh,
bizarre.
fabulous.
Really full, yeah. I mean, there's a horror movie I want to see called Obsession, which I wasn't even
Okay.
able to get a ticket for,
Really?
Something is happening. People want to experience movies in a theater again, it seems to me. Well, I mean, I'm living in Dublin, and I sometimes spend time in Paris. I go to the cinema a lot there. People are going back for reasons that people will
Probably be
work
a
out
good
at some
thing.
stage, but
Well,
they are.
physical media is coming back as well, isn't it? We keep
I
hearing
think
it,
so.
you know, be it records, be it Blu-rays, be it books. People are, I think, getting tired of the all digital, you don't own anything.
Yeah, we don't like to
And
be manipulated. We don't like to be fed stuff. We want to choose ourselves, don't we? And it's a great thing if audiences themselves decide what they want to see, I think.
absolutely. And so my last question for you, Neil, is what can we expect from you next? What's your next project?
I don't know. It's getting hard to make movies. It's getting really hard. I mean, I have two films I've written. I also write novels. I have a novel that came out last year, a science fiction novel called The Library of Traumatic Memory. You can buy it in some bookshops, But I've two films I want to make, but I don't know how close I'm to making them because one is very expensive and the other is very. It's, the other is a drama, that kind of thing. And a drama is the most difficult thing to make these days.
Of course. Would you not be tempted to adapt your own novel?
One of them is an adaptation of an
Oh,
adaptation of my own novel. Yeah,
fantastic.
that's the one that's difficult to get made. Yeah, but I hope to make it
Well,
soon.
fingers crossed we get to see it.
Okay.
But brilliant. No, Neil, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure meeting you and talking to you.
Thank you very
And
much.
I hope you manage to get into the next cinema showing you actually wish to go to.
I hope so. Okay. Goodbye now.
Thanks very
See ya.
much, Neil.